conference record has joined the conference.
Hi everyone, this is Heather Van Cura, and for our Dr. JSR call today, we are talking with several of the spec leads on Java EE8, and we're moving on now to JSR 369, which is the servlet 4.0 specification, and today we have one of the spec leads for this JSR, Ed Burns, to share with us how Adopt-a-JSR members can get involved in this JSR and give us a brief overview of what the JSR plans are for this edition of Servlet 4.0. So thanks for joining us, Ed.
Happy to be here. Okay, next slide, please. This is the safe harbor statement. Everything we do in JCP is all about transparency. And, you know, what we're talking about here is to give you an insight into what we're doing with Servlet and more specifically how you can get involved if you'd like to contribute to the final product. So these statements that I'm making are not to be construed as forward-looking or any kind of contract binding. So that's just our safe harbor. Next slide, please. A little bit about me. I work at Oracle, and I'm a longtime user of servlet technology in my role as working with the JSF spec, and I'm excited to have the opportunity to work on a different thing that's also related to JSF very much. But I'm going to be looking up to my colleague, represented on the next slide, Xinghui Chan, who has been a servlet spec lead since 2013. He's also been an expert group member on many JSRs relating to servlet for the last 13 years. So that's a very long time, and he's a very capable guy, and I'm happy to have him as my colleague. Next slide, please. Our agenda today, briefly, we only have about 8 minutes left, quickly go through some of the new features that are in HTTP2, talk about how Servlet might expose these features, and then have some time to explain how you can get involved via Adopt-a-JSR. Next slide. So HTTP2 is the first revision of the HTTP specification in over 15 years. That's a really long time. I don't have the date off the tip of my tongue. But these are the features that are new and important as far as the core HTTP framework. Now, Servlet 4.0 is being delivered as the promise of bringing HTTP 2 to Java EE. So the new features there are request-response multiplexing, binary framing layer, stream prioritization, server push, header compression, and the ability to upgrade from HTTP 1.1 in protocol. Next slide. I'm not going to talk about all of the new features in HTTP2. You can look at my Java 1 presentation that's available on Parlays, or I also gave a similar presentation updated with a demo that's also on Parlays at DevOx. The biggest one that people are most excited about is server push. And the important thing for server push is that it eliminates the need for resource inlining, which is one of the hacks that web developers have devised to account for performance problems with HTTP 1.1. The idea is it lets the server pre-populate the browser's cache in advance of the browser asking for the resource to put in that cache. There is no corresponding JavaScript API. So this is where people get confused when they think about server push and they think if it's a replacement for WebSocket. It absolutely is not. WebSocket is an application layer technology, and server push is very much a protocol layer technology. So frameworks such as JSF can take advantage of it because they have knowledge of what the resources are that associate with a web page. Another strategy that Jetty and other servers are going to be doing, probably Glassfish also, is looking at the last modified and other headers to determine sort of co-residency for resources and pages based on previous requests. So if they see a web page is requested and then very shortly thereafter this set of resources are requested, then that's a pretty good idea that we should pre-push them. So that's kind of an adaptive system where the server can learn which pages are going with which web resources, and adapt to that and send them down in advance. So that's an exciting thing and a fun software problem. Next slide. Another feature in HTTP2 is request response multiplexing. The original HTTP was basically a one-way kind of thing. Now, you had some ways to work around it with long polling, for example, but that really, no one ever thought that was anything but a hack or a workaround, right? And you're keeping the socket open and you're waiting for things. Not the best way to get bidirectionality. Would be better if we could rewrite the protocol to actually support bidirectionality, and that's what they're doing in the IETF working group on HTTP 2.0. It lets you do more things with a single TCP connection, and this bidirectionality is enabled by defining these terms in the spec, connection, a stream, a message, and a frame. There's a diagram on the next slide that explains these terms and puts them in context. So the connection, the TCP socket, can contain any number of streams, and within each stream you have a number of messages, and the messages themselves are composed of frames. And these frames can be interleaved within the stream. This is what enables the bidirectionality. By the way, this bidirectionality is also very fundamentally enabled by abandoning ASCII text as the encoding for the protocol. There's now a binary protocol. Next slide, please. So once you see these message frames being able to be interleaved, you can have you can interweave the logical streams over a single TCP connection. So this is really not a new idea. This has been in protocol since the 1960s. Another not new idea is the notion that stream IDs, even numbered stream IDs, are ones originating from the server, and odd-numbered stream IDs are ones originating from the client. And with that simple expedient, using, of course, the mod operator, you can easily discern which ones are which in the implementation. Next slide, please. I mentioned the enabling of that was done by dumping the new line delimited ASCII. This is what a frame looks like. You have a 24-bit length header that says how long this particular frame is going to be, then 8 bits of a type field, which can be any number of different things, but mostly data and headers, and push promise are the ones that we're going to be dealing with in servlet. The stream identifier, as I mentioned, odd or even numbers based on client or server, respectively, and then the frame payload. Next slide. So let's talk about how servlet might expose these features. Next slide. So this is the list I presented earlier in the talk. On the next slide, you'll see the ones we're actually going to be exposing, because not all of these things are, try the next one, because there's some formatting with the slide problems here. Okay, go back then. Unfortunately, I was hoping to gray out the ones that weren't available. But basically, all we'll be exposing, to some degree of request response multiplexing, yes. Binary framing, no, that's an implementation detail. Stream prioritization, we'll be exposing that only as much as allowing the frameworks to be able to set and consume the priorities, because it turns out the stream prioritization is really up to the browser whether they're going to pay attention to that or not. It's really an advisory only mechanism. It's not binding, you know, that can browsers can choose to ignore it. We will be providing support for server push. Header compression will be an implementation detail, and upgrade, we will be doing that, providing that in the API as well. Interestingly, ALPN, this is something that we're discussing in the expert group right now, is slated for inclusion in Java SE 9, yet servlet is going to be a part of Java EE 8. The plan of record is that Java EE8 will require a minimum level of Java SE8. So there's an implementation concern there, and we're discussing this in the expert group, but the current plan of record is that ALPN is really considered to be an implementation detail of the servlet. There's nothing going to be exposed really in the API, although the core HTTP specification very much depends on ALPN to do the protocol negotiation to get to HTTP2 or HTTP 1.1, depending on what the browser is looking for. Now, the other thing is HTTP2 over TCP. This is the non-encrypted thing rather than over TLS. And that's what the 1.0.1 switching protocols is for. So that's really, we expose that in the API only because we already exposed the upgrade header thing. Next slide, please. So with server push, the idea is you give a framework or some other technology that's sitting on top of servlet the ability to push resources to a client for a given URL and headers. And the idea is you can add a callback for completion of an error or push. It's not a replacement for WebSocket. As I said, there's no client API for this. As there, you know, if you do an app on WebSocket that's running in the browser, you're using the WebSocket JavaScript HTML5 API. There's nothing analogous for server push. This server push, though, is mostly really useful for frameworks that build on servlets, such as JSF. Next slide. Oh boy. So that's the sequence diagram, and you can basically see you have a browser which issues a request to server thread A, servlet.service. The server discovers that the browser will be needing these additional resources, so it dispatches push requests. These are handled in separate threads, and they're able to send back the results to the client before even any of the bytes of the index.html are being sent. So this gets lets the browsers have higher throughput, for example. Next slide. What this looks like in this JSF, for example, is this is part of the JSF faces servlet, and we have this statement in the existing code that says is resource request. This is where JSF decides if the resource is a JSF page or a style sheet or JavaScript or image. We're adding an additional check here to say, oh, if this is a push request, then we are all going to treat it as a resource request, since only resource requests will ever be pushed. We'll never be pushing additional HTML pages. That's just something that's part of the original request. On the next slide, you see how we dispatch the push request. Here, JSF has this external context abstraction. It has an existing method that is used for encoding every possible resource URL. And so all I had to do to make this work in a little bit of prototyping is hook into that external context method and say, dispatch the push request. And that's what causes that other bit of code from the previous slide to be invoked. Next slide. Okay, finally, the adopt a JSR. Next slide. We have the community tab on this our JCP page. And I'll list the tasks that I've currently got there. The first is JIRA components. Currently, we have none. So, you know, when you file an issue in the servlet JIRA, there are no subcategories, for example. So if this issue relates to filters, or if the issue relates to request dispatcher, you know, we don't have any categories that were never set up. So might be useful for someone from the community to come up with a list of categories for these things. We also could use some use cases for sessionless applications. This came across our users list, which is actually very active. We've had a lot of discussion on the users list and the servlet expert group, and discussions flying back and forth between those two different things. List of references to async and thread safety in the spec and Java doc. One of the big features we added in 3.0 and followed up on in 3.1 is asynchronous servlets, and those touched a lot of different parts of the spec. And as we clean up and clarify this in Servlet 4.0, it would be useful to have an exhaustive list of wherever we say anything about threading, in the servlet spec, because it's a rather large spec, and when we have this kind of cross-cutting concern, such as thread safety, we would like to make sure that we can touch all the points of the spec that mentioned. And of course, you can think of others. So I'm out of time, but I've reached the end, and I thank you very much for your attention.
Okay, thanks, Ed. That's really helpful. It's particularly this last slide, I think, really will be a good pointer for people who are interested in getting involved in adopting JSR 369. So thanks a lot for your time, and I'll see you again in the first part of 2015 and see if things have changed and if you have new requests for the Adopt a JSR members.
Thanks a lot.